have a basic concept, and it is a little bit difficult to explain how, from a location, the ether, you can arrive at all locations in the physical world, including all points in time of those locations in the physical world. If you are in the ether, as from the ether you manifest everything that is, it then becomes just a point of view, which in this case is a point of view equivalent to a frequency. You only change your point of view frequency from the ether, and you are already where and when you want it. No need to travel or move. Just change the frequency you have with the ship's engines to be compatible with seeing or being on another frequency, which in turn is a place with a specific point in time. Everything exists as an overlay, and a temporary place and position is perceived only when there is a frequency energy compatibility. It is comparable to being in a dark room. There are objects in that room that can only be seen with a certain light filter. So you turn your flashlight on with the blue light. You can only see things that are not blue, because those that are will disappear from your sight. But if you change the frequency of light and you put a red filter on your flashlight, then you can see the things that were previously invisible to your eyes because they are blue. And at the same time, you will no longer be able to see the things that are red, which were previously visible to you when you had the blue filter on. When a place has a frequency, by matching that frequency, it becomes that very same frequency, indistinguishable from it. When you transmit a frequency of whatever, say 102 MHz, and with something else you transmit 102 MHz, it only becomes more of the same. They are indistinguishable from each other. The toroid frequency of a ship is just like the blue or the red filter of our flashlight. We can only see or experience a place in space or time through the frequency filter that the toroid is. We just turn on our blue filter and we perceive being in the Pleiades era. With the engines, we change it to the red filter, and suddenly we perceive being on Earth. Nothing has changed. It is only our perception that modifies what we see. You have a radio or a stereo system to listen to music. You tune in to 102.5 FM and listen to Richard Wagner. Then turn the knob and tune into 92.4 FM. And listen to pop music. The two things were already there, in the same place. It is only the filter of your attention that allows you to listen to either Wagner or pop music, as if your stereo radio device was your ship. But the device itself does not move, or it doesn't go anywhere. The ship has an exact frequency map in its computer. At will, it envelops itself in a high-energy toroid through the principle of dominant frequencies. The exact energetic frequency of the toroid is imposed on the very ship and all that is within it, controlled by the computer. It changes its exact frequency to make it compatible with the place of destination, at the expense of ceasing to be compatible with the frequency of the place of origin. Time is only an energetic frequency variant of a place. In itself, in isolation, time is stopped. It is only with the presence of a consciousness from that instant, which is a frequency in itself, that the scene begins to be animated with a sequence of events. So, all the nanosecond instants that have never existed within the universe continue to exist as frequencies within a field that is infinite and includes everything. This field is the ether. Every moment in time is like a still photograph in time, events detained as in frames of a film reel. They are isolated still images, without meaning, without sequence, only some very similar to others. All is within the ether, without time. They are only fixed, eternal positions that make up the whole, which is the source, the unified I, the ether. As a film reel, it is not animated. It takes someone with perception to come and animate each detached image, to give them meaning, sequence, and velocity. Each sheet of paper is a place in space-time. It is fixed. There is no time. It just is. Traveling by ship to a particular position is simply to be compatible with one or another sheet of paper. From your arrival to that particular sheet is from where you begin perceiving the animation. This means that it is not a problem for a ship to travel from point A to point B, nor is it a problem to travel from one date to another. It is the same in space and time. This is called supraluminar flight and exceeds light speed by amount of incalculable factors, as it is an instant process or jump, regardless of distances or dates in the world or the physical side of the universe. In itself, it is not so difficult to understand once these things are comprehended. You only need a detailed frequency map and a device that changes and changes your frequency with precision. Svaru, you speak of the observer and how he or she animates everything with the perception. But the question still burns in me. Where does the observation itself come from? This something that we are observing and animating everything. How does the process of observing get produced? Of the consciousness itself with the ability to observe, self-awareness. The very process of being aware, awareness, having knowledge of your very existence, bestows a process that implies contrast in one way or another. If it is the whole, everything is present in the whole. Therefore, it would include all existing points in time and space. Therefore, there would be no temporal animation or any perception of the course of time, because everything is contained in the source of everything, which in this case I call ether. At the moment that there is a perception of separation from the whole, as a holographic fragment of the whole, there is a perception between what one is and what one is not. This is the basis of the perception of the animation of time, from the point of view of a particular observer consciousness point. The perception of apparent separation from the whole, being aware of what one is and of what is not part of oneself, is the basis of time itself. And as I have described before, the speed of time will depend on the amount of data that a consciousness can process in its awareness, being that the more data, the faster the time is perceived. As an example of this, a young child perceives time as something much slower than an adult, because he is processing less data than the adult. However, by further accelerating the amount of data perceptible by the awareness, a point is reached where a unification of temporal perception occurs, creating a new illusion of presence in a density. Illusion, because that's what density is. You change of one density to a higher one, where more data is processed, more awareness, more perception. However, if you compare it in one way or another with the speed of awareness of the first comparative point, you will find that there is a very pronounced time slip, as in the case between Temer, Erra, and the Earth, that is 4.6 days on the Earth for one day in Temer or Erra. However, the perception of the duration of a day in one place or another is basically the same. It is only the perception, say the average of the collective matrix formed by the individual consciousnesses that exist in a specific place, plane or density, and of which we cannot have a perception that one lives faster or slower for the duration of a unit of time, if we do not compare it directly with another specific place. In this case, the Earth versus Temer, for example. And what produced the apparent separation from the whole that you mentioned? It is said that the original source, the whole, was fragmented because it was the only way to continue expanding, which is the only thing that all the organisms with consciousness desire. But why? Or how does it happen exactly? If the great ether, original source, universe, or whatever it is called, is everything and understands everything, that everything is part of the same in a unified way, leaving nothing behind, all-inclusive, then it would also necessarily include the concept of having apparently isolated points. They are fragments of the whole. In this way, it could be explained that simply by its nature of containing everything and absolutely everything, the ether must include the consciousnesses and their perceptions of being limited, of being or not being something more, the emergence of duality, the I am versus the I am not. The fragmentation process is therefore just the mandatory part of the ether itself. Thank you, I understand. Asks Robert. A question. So logically, if we want to visit Earth in 5D, it will have totally different coordinates to 3D Earth, right? That's the way it is, right? So 5D Earth already exists and has always existed. It is not perceived by the perception of the consciousnesses that inhabit it. It depends then on the people to raise or not their frequency of perception. And neither I nor anyone from outside can do it for you. And once again, although the masses criticize me, it is the job of the humans and only of them to work on themselves and collectively to be able to perceive an already existing 5D Earth. I have already described how and why by modifying the frequency of the ship through its toroid. It jumps from one place to another. A ship only has to match its frequencies with those of the destination, and it is already the destination, because a frequency that is equivalent to another is only more of the same frequency. It does not differ. This is energetic law. A large ship, fighter or higher, I speak of those of Taygeta, works by combining three forms of flight through two means of propulsion, gravitational, action-reaction, as well as high-energy toroid for supraluminar flight. It is used as deemed necessary, depending on the maneuver. For example, when a fighter ship or higher enters the atmosphere, say when approaching a port in Temur, it will do so using gravitational engines almost exclusively, as they turn out to be the least invasive for the population below, especially when speaking of descent towards the surface and doing landing maneuvers of a large ship like this, 2,000 meters long, 7 nose-to-tail aircraft carriers, and 20 million tons of steel and titanium. Needless to say, it is a delicate maneuver. As a child, I remember well watching a large ship similar to this coming down from the clouds, removing the clouds, moving slowly down to the port. Smaller ships escorted her on both sides, making sure that everything went well. When it descended, I could see the area of the engines in the back. A large hole on the side with a large piece missing, some gas coming out of the huge hole as if a cosmic shark had torn a piece from the engine area. The ship was going down for repairs. Even so, with all the damage and all, it came down with its own power, thanks to multiple propulsion systems. Typically, a ship will take off from the surface using gravitational engines. Already in height, around 20,000 meters or more, it turns on the large plasma jets. With them, it leaves the atmosphere and speeds up to around 40,000 or 50,000 kilometers per second, where the toroid is switched on and the ship jumps to hyperspace, to the ether. When descending from hyperspace, the toroid is switched off and the ship descends from about 100,000 to 50,000 kilometers per second by starting either the plasma jet front engines, retro rocket style, or using gravitational engines to slow the ship down. Some ships do not need that, such as the Suzy-class ships. They can jump into hyperspace completely detained and return from it already completely stopped. In the same way, the Suzy-class ships have a cutting-edge technology that separates them from other classes of ships, even from Taygeta, making them the most advanced. It is considered secret technology, or top secret, as it is called on Earth, although the fact of them existing is not secret. It is only how it is achieved. Being able to jump into hyperspace from an immobile position, and from there operate without moving anywhere, still detecting its original surroundings. While in this flight mode, static hyperspace, they are invulnerable. From that flight mode, they can be present anywhere, gather intelligence, extract personnel from the surface, go through walls, because hard matter does not stop them, or even carry out attacks with their weapons, all being undetectable and invulnerable. This technology is considered as a deterrent or persuasion, where the mere presence of a Suzy changes the scenario in Taygeta's favor. But it is known that this technology exists and that Taygeta has it, but nobody else. With that, Suzy-class ships being extremely dangerous. So far, other races have not been able to replicate it.